This episode of Coffee House Shots is sponsored by Alliance Witten Investment Trust. From the OPEC oil crisis of the 1970s, the financial crash in 2008, to the COVID epidemic and Liz Truss's doomed premiership, there has been no shortage of economic crises over the last 58 years. And yet, throughout that time, every single year, without fail, we've paid out an increased dividend to our shareholders. In fact, Alliance Witten's history dates all the way back to 1888. And today, we manage around £5 billion in assets. If you're looking for a less stressful way to invest in stocks and shares, learn more about Alliance Witten and find your comfort zone.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Seal. I'm joined today by Katie Balls and Kate Andrews. Now, Katie, we are T-minus 48 hours before World Tariff Day. What is the mood in Whitehall and particularly the Treasury about the looming prospect of sanctions being slapped on UK trade?
Well, of course, we're joined by Kate Andrews, who can give us the real mood in Washington. But I just think if you think about the different ways they're being described, it tells something. So in the US, it's Liberation Day. That's how Donald Trump has billed this. And here it's World Tariff Day. And when you raise the prospect and you speak to someone in government about it, they start to look a little bit uneasy and stressed. I think there's something to be said, too, for we had the spring statement last week, which was difficult for the government. I think between this week and last week, both are seen as almost equally troublesome, and potentially this week will have a bigger impact in terms of Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer's fortunes. Now, we know that Donald Trump has already announced various tariffs. He's talked about, obviously, the automobile one. There's been talk of steel tariffs. Some of those will come into effect this week. But also, we're waiting to see what happens on reciprocal tariffs. And that is the view from Donald Trump, which is trying to fix what he sees as long existing inequalities between the US and other countries when it comes to trade deficits. UK ministers were initially fairly optimistic that they would be exempt from the majority of these tariffs, partly because there is not so much of a trade deficit than, for example, the European Union. However, I think it is fair to say that in recent weeks, the optimism has drained. There's now a view that even in a good case scenario, the UK is going to be the subject of some tariffs come Thursday. And the question is, can they mitigate it? Some of which could happen this week. You had a call between Keir Starmer and Donald Trump on Sunday night. They were talking about this idea of a limited free trade deal. The talks were going at pace. We know that the UK government is looking at some things like the digital services tax and potentially moves on AI and others to try and appease the US government. But I think the general sense is, even if they manage to get a little bit, it's still going to be tricky. And there's more of a long-forming conversation about how you avoid those. The slight wrinkle is that Keir Starmer, if he cannot show that through charm and this attempt to bring Donald Trump in, he can deliver results, he's going to face more calls to threaten retaliatory tariffs. And that has not been the plan of the UK government so far. They haven't ruled it out, but they're trying to go for niceties first. And therefore, what does the UK do in response? And does that, show force that Donald Trump respects? Or does that end up in a situation where they actually lose some of the closeness they already have?
And I mean, Kate, how much is the UK featuring in conversations in Washington? I mean, it was reported last week that, for instance, in terms of automobile tariffs, Donald Trump called the manufacturers of big car makers and said, don't raise prices. But of course, that's not really how markets work, is it?
It's not how markets work. It's not how tariffs work. It is indication, of course, that the president really does have an understanding of how they do work, even if that's not his messaging to the American people. He knows that if you place levies, taxes on these foreign imports, that the cost for American consumers is going to go up. And the cost for purchasing these individual products or metals and necessities for American business is also going to go up. So the fact that he's saying to American companies, don't raise prices, is very strong indication that he knows exactly what he's doing. And what we don't know, as Katie alluded to there, is exactly what's coming on Wednesday. And when I say we don't know, it does not seem that plenty of senior officials in the White House know what's coming on Wednesday. It doesn't fully seem like Donald Trump has decided what's coming on Wednesday. And in some ways, this isn't surprising. And the tariff conversation has been ebbing and flowing drastically over the past couple of months. Just last week, it was expected that these tariffs were actually going to be more narrow and targeted at what the Treasury Secretary dubbed the Dirty 15, which are countries that have, in America's mind, in the president's mind, a disproportionately high trade volume with the United States. The UK is not on that list. But the briefings over the weekend are that the president has been encouraging his officials to actually go full tariffs on everyone in the world, start from that premise, and then roll back. That's probably why the prime minister in the UK is on the phone with Donald Trump, because it's very possible that you could get tariffs on everybody. Reciprocal tariffs is what Trump calls them. And then very quickly, you could see a bunch of them roll back. Of course, this raises questions as to why you do it in the first place. But of course, for Donald Trump, so much of this is about the show. In terms of the feelings in Washington, I think we have to expand it slightly further. In Washington, because it is still so MAGA dominated, it's still very new and fresh within the administration, there remains a general sense that people, even when they really disagree with these tariffs or have an issue with these tariffs, want to still caveat that with the president may have a point here, the president may have a point there. But of course, we split our capitals in America. You know, I'm here in the political capital, but in the financial capital in New York, the conversations are very, very different. And the stock market is yet again in turmoil going into this week. And depending on what Donald Trump does on Wednesday, that could get a lot worse. I just think it's important to remember that that factor does matter for Donald Trump. He may imply that it doesn't, but in his first term, he did like to say that he was getting great trade deals for America, but he loved to say even more that America's economy was booming. And the fact that that is on the table, the fact that that remains a huge question mark, depending on what happens this week and beyond, will be a source of doubt, will be a source of frustration for the administration. So yes, I think within the White House, there's still huge doubt as to what actually happens on Wednesday. It now looks, compared to last week, that these tariffs are going to be much more expansive, that they're going to hit far more countries. But it is not inconceivable to think that the next 48 hours could be a game changer. And perhaps if more world leaders do get on the phone, we could see something quite bespoke.
And of course, Katie, you know, tariffs are just one of the big issues affecting the US-UK relationship right now. And the other is Ukraine. And over the weekend, there was reports that Donald Trump was growing exacerbated by the slow pace of Vladimir Putin's role in negotiations.
Yes, and he said he was very angry. But then a couple of hours later, he did seem to play the stand slightly and was saying, oh, I can trust my mate Vladimir, who couldn't. So I think, as ever, it's a little bit tricky to put too much great store in one comment from Donald Trump. I think probably one of the more telling things was on the phone call between Keir Starmer and Donald Trump, in the official number 10 readout, they did have, you know, they agree they had to push Putin further. And I think that's the first time in a number 10 readout they have been confident enough to write up what Donald Trump says as being on the same page as Keir Starmer on Russia, which does suggest a hardening of the position. And of course, if it is the case that Putin keeps, you know, playing long, you know, making comments that Donald Trump seems unhelpful, it does mean that this deal that Donald Trump hoped to land is going to become harder to do. But we've already seen that deal is pretty hard to do. In the initial choreography, you would have had a different situation at the Oval Office when you had that infamous Zelensky-Trump meeting with J.D. Vance. Slowly people come back on the table. Now Putin, some of his comments are making things harder. Yet we still know that Donald Trump really does want to bring about some conclusion to this. And I think in a negotiation, there's always going to, particularly a three-part negotiation, if we call it that, we could stretch it out further perhaps. There's always going to be moments of tension, posture and so forth. And it is one of those ones where, you know, if, for example, it's been reported there's this 20th of April date for trying to reach some kind of agreement. Well, right now, sitting here, that feels pretty far off. But we know there is pressure on all sides to bring something to the table.
And Kate, elsewhere, this story that's been dominating here in Westminster has been about migration today. The Prime Minister has held a big summit in London on that. One of the things that Donald Trump supporters say he's got right in his first few months in office has been his work on the southern border. I just wondered if you could bring us up to date on how the President's efforts on migration are going over there.
Once again, we're talking about a really big show, and actually a quite big question in the press at the moment in DC is how these numbers actually compare to the Biden administration. We're going to have to wait for a bit more data. But I mean, we're looking at two different numbers, right? We're looking at who is illegally actually crossing the border at the US-Mexican point, and then who is being deported if they do not have legal documentation to be in the US. And the crackdown at the borders is really what Trump's that was his big selling point during the election. And at the moment, I think there's very little doubt that Donald Trump is going to get those numbers down quite significantly, not least because a lot of it just has to do with enforcing current law and, you know, the exceptions that were being made under the Biden administration at the border. You just start reversing that, you can make quite a big change. But there's a bigger question about deportation numbers and also the show and dance that's going along with them. Donald Trump understood during the election and would even say out loud, he understood he needed to go after just the most heinous, terrible criminals in America who were not legally allowed to be here. Because once you start getting into people who are, you know, obeying the law, working hard, contributing to society, paying tax, that's going to get a lot trickier. And you have already started to see some really grim stories of people, you know, who more or less have been in the country for a very long time being selected over some of those foreign criminals. And I think that's becoming, it's not just a talking point amongst the left. I think there's a broad sense, not least because America sees itself as a nation of immigrants and we're so unique in this way, that gets really close to the bone, especially when children are involved. That is a narrative that's going to continue to develop. It will be so interesting to see how the deportation numbers compare and who is being deported, given what Donald Trump promised during the election. I think the Trump administration is finding some of this trickier than they originally thought they would. And I think that's true for his supporters as well, not just on immigration, but on tariffs too. It's been interesting to speak to people in DC who were really excited about the tariff initiative, who thought this is our philosophical, ideological moment to change world trade for good, to make it more protectionist, to make it truly America first. And I can't help, when talking to them, feel like there's some remnants of a Liz Truss moment going on. And to be very clear, when I say that, I don't mean Donald Trump's going anywhere. He's already far surpassed those 49 days. But a sense of real ideological disappointment from people who really believe that he was going to do what he said he was going to do in shifting the Overton window and really changing the way that tax, trade, whatever it is done for good. The fact that the president is opting to do immigration policy, trade policy, everything by executive order still, he's not engaging Congress. He is signing this all into legislation. It means that it's unstable. It means it's flaky. It means the Democrats could undo everything he's doing right now until he gets Congress involved. And it also means it's all over the place. I mean, people who really like tariffs or people who are really pro-deportation are incredibly aware that changing your mind every 12 hours about how you're going to do it and who's going to be affected is not the way to win hearts and minds. And it's certainly not the way to keep the markets calm. And you know, again, regardless of your views on all this stuff, people are very aware that this isn't, you know, this is something that affects everybody. It affects retirees. It affects workers. You know, how the economy, whether or not it's boding well, matters to all Americans. And I think there's a growing ideological frustration that a lot of the ideas that Donald Trump campaigned on, that many people in Washington right now like and we're excited about, are being undermined by the process and the way Trump is going about it. So not a full Liz Truss comparison, but I do get hints of it, of already a bit of a disappointment that this isn't being done in the most serious and medium-term way that it could be.
Thanks, Kate. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening to Coffeehouse Shots.